Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Estelle. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
So before we get started, I want to introduce Estelle. Estelle Hallig is a good friend of mine and also a great publicist that we've been working for a couple of years now. And she's joining us because she loves Tiffany's work. And so I'm excited to basically be a fairy godmother and match make this interview happening. So hi, Estelle.
Hey, Laura, thank you so much for making my dreams come true.
I love this. And so, hi, Tiffany. So before, so why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so my name is Tiffany, and I'm a writer, and I also run an independent record label. I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area, although I grew up in a small town in Ohio. And pretty much, was raised on books and music, and that sort of turned into my life. And besides reading a lot and writing and listening to music and running a label, I like to cook. I like to hang out with my dogs. I have two giant Irish wolfhounds. And I like to hike in the redwood trees, much like the characters in Sorrow.
I love this. Life is hitting hard, you know.
Always.
So what inspired you to start writing? And then was it you were hoping to be published, or were you just writing for fun once you were starting to write your first book? Because I know that you were a screenwriter as well.
Yes. Well, it's funny because I grew up wanting to be a writer, but I sort of had this idea that you had to be this genius Hemingway sort of person to be a writer. But then when I graduated from college, my first job out of college was a script reader for a production company in LA. I had gone to school in Berkeley and I moved to LA after I graduated. And I got this job reading scripts, and I probably read 5 to 10 scripts a day, and most of them were so bad that I thought to myself, if these terrible scripts are getting themselves to my desk, then I can do this. And that's when I started writing a screenplay. And to be honest, I started the screenplay because I was madly in love with someone who would not date me. And I stalked him for 4 years and decided that I was going to write this screen. I was going to write a movie about him, and I was going to make it, get it made. And then someday he was going to see it and realize I was the one that got away. And that is why I started writing.
Oh my God. I love that. Did anything ever happen with him?
He is my husband.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I love that. That is the best, like, kind of meet cute story I've ever heard.
Yes. Well, the funny thing is that I wrote the film, and I ended up getting it made. Like, it was really like a lot of luck where I just sent it to an independent production company that really loved the script, and they ended up making the film. And right after we finished filming and we were in the middle of the editing process, I got an email from my future husband, because we had been friends in school and I'd asked him out all the time, but at the time he had a girlfriend and he wouldn't pay any attention to me. And so I got this email from him saying, my girlfriend and I just broke up, and, you know, how are you and whatever. And so I was like, we have to finally go out on a date. And so he was going to grad school in Boulder at the time, and I flew to Boulder and we went on like this 3-day long date and became, you know, a couple and were madly in love. And then a couple months later, he said, so you allegedly made this movie. when do I get to see it? And then I was like panicked. Like,
oh my gosh.
Okay. So I sat him down in the editing room and I was like, I'm going to show you the movie. But there's something I should tell you first about it. And he was like, what? And I was like, it's kind of about you. So, but it didn't scare him away. So here we still are 25 years later.
That's a really good sign. That's funny.
That's a great story. I love it.
I feel like that is the start of something too.
I know everyone says that I should definitely work that into a book at some point. I'm sure it will happen.
I love it. So going from the screenplay to God Shaped Hole, was that related, or were you just...
Well, you know, I did not like working in Hollywood. I didn't like the environment of Hollywood. It just wasn't for me. It was a lot of kind of schmoozing, and, you know, you had to know the right people to get anywhere. And I'm a bit of an introvert. I prefer just kind of sitting at my computer with my imaginary friends and hanging out with them all day. And so I just felt like that wasn't going to be the career that I was going to excel at. And I started God Shaped Hole sort of as a creative exercise because I was so bored writing the scripts that I was getting hired to write. And then I took a writing workshop at NYU around the same time. And the instructor of that class was one of my favorite authors. And basically he said, "You're the best writer in this class and you should be writing novels. If you hate writing screenplays, write novels." And from that moment on, he gave me the courage to really do it. And so I feel like I owe him a lot, because I'm not sure that I would have thought I was capable of it had he not like positively reacted to what was essentially the first 60 pages of God Shaped Hole.
I love that so much. I took a lot of writing courses as well. And I remember having that feeling when someone really saw you.
Yeah, and someone that you admire and whose writing really moves you, you know, like he just was somebody that was a huge influence on my work. And for him to like sort of see me and really acknowledge that I could do that meant everything.
Who was it?
Tim O'Brien.
Oh, Tim O'Brien.
Yeah.
The Things We Carried.
The Things They Carried, which is one of my all-time favorite books.
We studied that quite a bit. I went to school out in Long Island at first, and they have the Southampton Writers like conference or something, and they were always talking about Tim O'Brien. So that's really funny.
Yeah, he was just really special.
I love that. Did you send it out to a lot of places? Like, what was the process like to actually get someone to acquire it?
Well, at the time, I only had a Hollywood agent, so I had to basically break up with him and then search for a literary agent, and that was much harder than actually getting the book published. I mean, I queried, and this was back in, you know, 2000, where you couldn't just reach everybody by email back then, and so I sent out probably 100 query letters to various agents that I thought might like the book based on who else they represented, and out of those 100 query letters, two agents said, "Send me the first 30 pages." And out of those two agents, one became my agent and has been my agent ever since. And so so that was a long process trying to find an agent. And once I did, he started sending it out. And the funny thing was that when he started getting rejection letters, he kept sending them to me. And after about five of them, I was like, why? I mean, I just assumed like no one's ever going to publish this book. Like, and I said, "Why do you keep sending me these rejection letters? I don't really want to see them." And he's just like, "Because the day I send you the one where somebody wants to buy it, it's going to mean all that much more." And it certainly did. So
I love that so much. One thing, well, maybe I should do my little fangirl thing here is, you know, I picked up your book pretty soon after it was released. I was in high school. Wow. Went to our very cool Barnes & Noble that we all used to hang out.
The good old days.
Yeah. And a place where I had a very romantic moment a few years later.
Nice.
Not with my husband, but that's okay. And I saw your book on like a new fiction, new writer's table. And I picked it up. And I totally fell in love with it. And I remember when I was finishing it, I had to go to the dentist or something. And I'm like in my bedroom. I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen at the end of this book? And I was like, devastated crying, like, all, like as one does when they fall in love with a book, also knowing that I would have to say goodbye to it because I didn't want to. And it was a book that I just like passed around to so many of my classmates in my math class, particularly. I was not a math person. And like two girls, especially who I unfortunately don't talk to anymore, Karina and Cindy, they loved your book too.
Oh, hi, Karina and Cindy.
And then somehow my sister, who is 5 years younger than me, also picked up your book. And she was like very much freaking out about this interview. She was the one who bought me the copy of Sorrow. It's like, she's not much of a reader. I mean, I know it's a little bit different when there's someone like me and probably Laura, who's like reading like 100 books a year. my sister probably maybe reads like 5.
Wow.
And your book sticks with her all of these years later, as it does with me. So,
I love that.
And thinking, you know, like sometimes when you're like, I don't know, maybe I've just been doing this more because we're like in quarantine all of the time, but thinking like those little small things that kind of got you where you were and you didn't know. And I'm like, I was kind of like a publicist back then. And I was like, and I, the feeling of giving someone a book and knowing that it affected them was something that I loved and was obsessed, and that was an addictive feeling. And now that's something that I do for my job. So,
wow, I love that.
And yeah, I mean, and so to talk to you, of course, is like super special. And actually, this year I got an award for work, and one, I had to fill out this interview, and I'm so mad that they, when they wrote up the piece, they took out the part about me talking about your book.
Oh.
One of the questions was like, what book means the most to you? And it's always God-shaped hole for me, because I think of like that moment when I discovered it, how special that was. And then also, as I continue to fangirl, one thing you did in the back of the book was put an email. And for some reason, I don't do this really. I emailed you and you emailed me back, and we had an exchange like right around the time I was like looking into colleges and trying to figure out what I was doing, and you were so kind and so wonderful, and I'm getting like really
I love that.
So I love that, like I'm a little bit a part of that feeling for other people now, because I know how much it means to me, and I can only imagine what it feels for you. I've like, because I talk about your book so much, other people will say like, oh my God, I read God-Shaped Hole too, and I loved it. And so I'm like finding new fans, but they're people who are my age who I'm sure discovered it very early on too. So I'm just curious about that for you, because the landscape has changed. Publishing has changed so much. How we connect with authors and people we love, and how we share books have changed. So curious about all of that. And that was a really long question.
Okay. Well, I mean, I have so many feelings about what you said, because first of all, like, thank you for sharing that, because it means so much to me. And I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't. You know, I know a lot of people, I work with musicians all the time, and I feel like they have to like maintain this sort of like coolness. And I don't feel like I need to be cool about anything, because I am first and foremost a fan of all of my favorite artists, whether they're writers or musicians, and I know how much their work means to me. I know how my favorite bands and my favorite writers have literally changed my life and shaped who I've become. And that is not an exaggeration. Like, I would be a different person if it wasn't for certain bands and certain songs and certain books. And so to think that that what I create from that, from those artists too, like they plant seeds in me that grow into my own works of art, and then I share those with the world. And it's a vulnerable thing to do, you know, of sharing any kind of art. And so for somebody to know that it means that much to someone, and then that it has that ripple effect, like for you, the reader, that's sharing it with other people, that are hopefully sharing it with other people and being touched by it, or learning something about themselves from it, or about other people from it. I mean, that is the definition of art to me, you know? Yeah. And what October and Joe, I feel like, talk a lot about. I mean, it's a great segue into that story, because I think that they recognize the power of art and to sort of lift us out of our sorrow, you know? And if we didn't have those things, if I didn't have those things, I'm not sure how I would have survived childhood. I'm not sure how I would have survived in my 20s or my 30s or my 40s. And I'm about to turn 50 on Friday. So
what?
I know. That's, it's very daunting.
That's a lie. But I think you're right. And when I was reading Sorrow, I felt like if there was any book to read this year, this was one of them, just because of all of the nature, like connecting to nature, connecting to art, but also having these blocks. Mm-hmm. I've like and personally, fear. Yeah, yes. And losing people and thinking about people, reconnecting with people, I think was something I thought about too. I think you, like, you'll come out of it with one of, like, being able to maybe move forward in one of those directions. Like, let's fix the creative block. Like, maybe let's reach out to that friend that I haven't talked to you in a while. And I do feel like there is something really healing about the book, especially when
I love that.
We're all by ourselves, essentially.
Yeah. And I feel like writing it was really healing for me in that sense too, because I've had experiences in my life with people who are really bogged down by fear and can't show up for the people in their life that they care about. And one of the interesting things in being Joe for the 2 years that I wrote this book, you know, and when I say that, I mean, you know, I had to step into his shoes and see the world the way he sees the world. And I learned so much about humanity by being him, because standing on the outside looking at somebody like that, it's easy to be so hurt by their behavior. But when you can step into their shoes and see why they're acting like that and the fear that holds them back and the trauma from their childhoods, and it just taught me a lot about compassion and looking at people with a different kind of compassion.
Can you give a little bit, like, what's your quick elevator pitch for Sorrow? Because I want to dive in more, but I want people to know.
I mean, I feel like I'm terrible at this, but what I usually say is that it's a book about art and love and friendship and about finding the courage to be who we're meant to be and following our heart in a way that allows us to find the things in our life that nourishes our soul. And how important that is, you know? Yeah. I mean, it sounds heavy, but I think that those are things that, you know, and again, like I was saying, I grew up in a small town in Ohio, and it was like the kind of place where a lot of people had a lot of big dreams, but they never went after them. And they're miserable. And it was heartbreaking. And I've worked with musicians who are the same way, who just have so much talent, but just can't get out of their own way. Yeah. And it bums me out so much. And I think I just wanted to explore that. And that's where the story came from.
One thing I was curious is that you chose to tell from Joe's point of view. Did you ever think about maybe making it a dual POV with October, or did you start maybe with writing October's?
I did, actually. I started writing it from her point of view. And because the original sort of scene that came to me, that was the beginning of the writing of this book, and I'm sure if you've read any of the press stuff, you know that it was inspired by a song by The National, mm-hmm. Called Pink Rabbits. And there's this line in the song where he says, "Somebody said you disappeared in a crowd. I didn't understand then. I don't understand now." And something, I mean, I'd listened to that song 1,000 times before, but one day I was out hiking and that line really hit me and caused me a lot of pain. And it conjured up this whole scene in my head of these two characters at a show at the Greek Theater in Berkeley, and one of them just walking away and nobody knowing why. And that was the first scene I wrote originally for the book. And it was from her point of view, because he disappeared and she was like, "Where the fuck did he go?"
Yeah.
And as I started writing the book, I realized that if I was not telling the story from his point of view, A, no one was going to like him, because they were just going to see his behavior from the outside looking in and mm-hmm. think he was an asshole. And nobody was certainly not going to understand him. And so I flipped it around and it just became like such a more intense and deeper story, especially with the sort of the birth of Cal and and like kind of focusing on their relationship for a while and seeing what that was all about. And it was just, it was really cool way of writing, because I hadn't written like that before.
I love that. So Cal is his childhood best friend that he is totally estranged from. And one thing that I really liked about this is that they had a very like vulnerable relationship. They came into each other's lives at a time when they both really needed each other. Mm-hmm. They both had dreams, but Cal went off and found his, and Joe stayed back. And I thought that it didn't, I loved how it didn't feel macho. I think that's really important to show, because I think a lot of times we, of course, I mean, friendship is like the number one most important thing in my life that I think about all of the time, and how mm-hmm. I can be a better friend. But I think as women, we talk about that a lot more often than talking about men's like friendships, although, you know, the bromance, but even this just felt like it went kind of beyond that.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested in your best friendship advice, and also if anything in your life sort of inspired their back and forth.
Well, you know, I feel like their friendship really, well, first of all, it was a little bit inspired by a couple of musicians that I've worked with in the past. But also I was curious about men and boys friendship. And I kind of wanted to explore that, because like you said, women are so different when they're friends, or so we think, you know, like we are, we just like, we bond hard, and we share so much of ourselves with our female friends. And I was very curious about whether or not men do that. And one of the things I found out in just asking around to men and talking about their friendships was that people who, or men who had formed friendships at a younger age that sort of grew, sort of had that experience too, where they bonded pretty hard and shared experiences like that, and kind of just grew up into this this sort of brotherhood. But like, for instance, my husband, who, when he was growing up, his dad moved around every 3 years. They moved to the family every 3 years. So he doesn't have, like, I have friends that I knew in kindergarten, because I grew up in the same town, and mm-hmm. he doesn't have any like good friendships prior to college. And even now, you know, his friends are like people that he goes biking with, or they're coworkers that, you know, he's forced to hang out with all the time, mm-hmm. but he doesn't have the same kind of bonds that I have with my friends. So I was really interested in exploring that. And I really did find that for me, Joe and Cal, I think also Cal was alone, and we don't really see that side of him in the book, because we are looking at it from Joe's point of view. And, you know, from Joe's point of view, Cal is this super confident and just like, you know, go-getter. And he is that. But I think that we learn as the book goes on that Cal was also, you know, lonely and needed Joe as much as Joe needed him, which is something that I think isn't quite obvious. But I also think that because Joe lost a brother, he really clung to that friendship as his family, and vice versa. And so, just watching them, their friendship grow was like some of the most meaningful scenes in the book to me are scenes between the two of them.
It felt like their love story.
I know it does a little bit. It really is. Like, so that's why I always say it's like, when people call this like a love story, I'm like, but it's also a story about deep friendship that really like changes people.
That's funny you say that, because I do find that your books in particular are hard to kind of put into a box. I wouldn't call them romance.
No,
they're definitely not genre romance. Can't get any of my romance people yelling at me. So I guess it's many things, but how do you classify your own work?
I mean, I usually just say general fiction because I hate the idea. I mean, some people do classify me as romance, and I kind of like, I try not to get annoyed by that. But my defense of that is that, and it's no knock to romance, but to me, romance is fantasy. Romance is get me out of my mundane life and show me something that's unreal or unrealistic. And I feel like I strive to create really human characters. Like, I want to know what it's like to be a human and how to be the best human. And just, you know, I feel like that's what we're doing every day in our lives anyway, is like, how do we be human, you know? Right. And that's what I write about. So I feel like it's so misleading for people to be like, oh, she writes romance. Cause I'm like, if you want the fantasy, you're not going to get that here.
Yeah, it's true. When I talked about your book on my job's Insta stories a few weeks ago, and I'm like, it's hard because you also don't like want to give anything away, but it does feel like your books are more about like the personal journey. And yes, if there is another person who is along for the ride, that's great. And also about, they're all about art. I was like, my husband, my poor husband, sitting in the car listening to Babylon, but I'm like, every single one of her books is about like struggling with your creative side, dealing with like these outside forces, like wondering if you're going to sell out, losing the things that you love, or just being scared of, you know, the art that you love so much. And it's just, I think it feels to me when I'm reading it, like very instinctual, like for you as a writer to put that in, but I'm wondering if you like have to really work it in there or think about it.
No, you just like, I feel like you just, it's, this is like a therapy session, and you really just like taught me something about what I'm doing here. And like, yeah, wow. I do write about that all the time. And I mean, you kind of just summed up my whole life, like art and, you know, figuring it out and being scared. And, you know, I think I write about people that I, you know, I connect with. And I think that they're real people, you know. And I mean, the other thing about romance versus what I do is I think there's a difference between romance and love. And I think I definitely write about love. I care very much about love. I think love is the most important thing on the planet that we as humans can do. And I'm so curious about it. And I have so many questions about what it all means and how we can be the best people we can be in our relation and our connections with others. And so I definitely, you know, would throw that onto the flag of like, yes, I write love stories for sure, because every story is a love story.
It's true. It's totally true. Whether it's just about your love of art, you're totally right. I think, and I mean, I feel like a very huge defender of romance a lot. You know, I do work for a romance publisher, and I do see where you're coming from. We do, you know, we got that happily ever after here. But the way that you write your characters, it just feels like they're really meant for each other. And it's like, I feel like it, maybe in your first book, there was like this soul connection. Is that a line? I don't know. I just strangely reread God-Shaped Hole a few weeks ago, and I did not even know this was going to happen. So look at that.
Wow.
But it feels like that. Like, I can always count on that when you introduce me to two characters, but it also feels like that is a really tough thing to achieve. I mean, I'm reading romance reviews all of the time, and the number one thing is like, do they have chemistry, or are they actually meant for each other? Some people don't always agree about that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I believe in that. I think that's why I write about it a lot. It's because anytime, I mean, not even just with lovers, but with friends, like it's always been the kind of thing where like one of my best friends, I remember the first time I met her, and we were at both at a dinner party for we had a mutual friend that was having a birthday party, and she was sitting across from me, and both of us were like, we weren't drinking and we weren't eating half of the food on the table, but we had to contribute to the check. And like, we were both kind of like I was sitting there thinking like, why do I have to pay all this money? I didn't even drink any of those pitchers of sangria. And like, I looked up at her and we made eye contact. And in those 2 seconds, I was like, we're going to be friends forever. I just knew it. And that was 20 years ago.
I love that. Also, I don't think anyone is missing those moments at those group dinners now, like when we can't really have them, because those are always the worst. And I totally dread them.
I know, right?
Yes.
But so, yeah. And I mean, like all the times that I've ever been really, truly in love, like that's the kind of thing it is where you just feel like this is bigger than us. And there's a connection here that is worth exploring. And I'm fascinated by that. So I definitely write about it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing I also is like, as kind of a fan who is, you know, keeping up with you and noticing, you know, you're writing every few years, your graphic novel came out last year, right? Which was wonderful. I loved it. So, but that was like totally different and like not what any of us like fangirls are like expecting after a long wait. So I guess I want to hear more about like your music life. And also, did you plan to just sort of space out everything? Were you just like not moved by anything and just having your own sort of like writer's block?
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. Because when I wrote my first two books, so God Shaped Hole and How to Kill a Rockstar, I was a full-time writer and it was all I did. So I was a little bit more prolific back then. But once I started the label, and I started the label thinking it was going to be sort of a hobby, like something that I did on the side.
That and sounds like so overwhelming to think of as a hobby.
It was so dumb. I was so naive. And, you know, and it took over my life. And, you know, anybody who has ever started a business knows that it's all encompassing. And so there was an almost 10-year period where I just couldn't write. I couldn't figure out how to get, you know, to switch brains from left brain to right brain. And eventually it started taking an emotional toll on me where I was just like, I'm so stressed out. I need to be creative. There's this story that's been marinating in me for a decade and I have to just figure out how to make this work. And so, you know, it was just a matter of deciding to, you know, get up at 4:30 every morning and write for 3 or 4 hours before I went to the office. And I feel like by the time I got to the end of the book, like I'd really figured out how to balance both and do it throughout the day. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how the next book goes because I'm not going to wait another 10 years to write. But to add to your question, I do also think that for better or for worse, and probably for worse, I am the kind of writer that can't just sit down and write, you know, like there has to be something inside of me that's either upsetting me or exciting me or that I'm questioning really intensely that just needs to get out. And I wish that it wasn't like that for me, but it is what it is, you know? And but the good news is there's something stirring now. So I'm getting ready to start something new, which I'm excited about.
I'm so glad to hear that. I was wondering, I mean, I kind of talked about this a little bit, like, you know, things have changed since your last two books came out. The graphic novel is a totally different story, but like deciding to go with a smaller, like Sourcebooks is a small publisher, but your current publisher is smaller. What kind of went into that sort of decision for you?
I mean, that was honestly just a decision based on who was most excited about the book. I mean, when my agent was shopping it around, for some reason, Sourcebooks didn't want to put it out. Mm-hmm. And so we had to look around and the guys at Woodhull were just, they really got the story, you know, there were, and like any of the bigger publishers didn't like the title. And, you know, they just had a lot of issues. Like one of them wanted me to make Joe like 10 years younger. And I was like, he's going to be too young to know any of this stuff or be aware. Right.
He's 31, I think, in the book.
Yeah. Right? Like he's in his early 30s when it starts. So, there was just, you know, it was just, and Woodhull was so great because they just seemed to really understand the story as I wrote it. And so, yeah, I just went with them. And the other thing that I loved about working with them is how much they let me have a say in the cover, because I felt really strongly that this cover had to be masculine and it had to be, you know, it had to encompass the story in a really beautiful way. And mm-hmm. I just think that we ended up capturing that so well, and I just love it so much.
It's funny, when I was reading the book this weekend, we went to a state park, and it is the perfect cover for the book. I think it just, right? Like the colors and everything, it just felt, yes, it's definitely perfect for kind of the mood.
Yeah. And perfect for fall too. Like, yes. Right now it just seems so appropriate. Where are you located, by the way?
I'm in Queens.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we went to a state park, and well, this is what we do now, which is why I feel like, again, this is like the perfect read at the moment, because we're like, well, parks are where we can stay like very spread from people. So it's our new like little adventure that we go on every weekend when we can't see or do much.
Yeah, same. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have the trails around where I live for the last, 9 months, because we've been sheltering in place since March and have barely left a 15 mile radius of our house since then. So thank God for nature.
I agree. I mean, we've tried to find as much nature in the city as possible. We take like 2 walks a day, but now it's getting darker. Like, yeah, it's
darker, you know, and colder.
It looks like it's 10 o'clock outside. So grateful that we have a place with beautiful trees. And then also like able to get out and go to a park, and I'm just like not sure what's going to happen in the winter, but maybe that will be my own, I don't know, force to like actually get into creative things again, because I think reading this book, I was just like, oh man, I'm in, you know, I love my job so much. Part of my job is being creative. And so that does take, I don't want to say it sucks something, but I mean, it is hard and exhausting. And I think I don't take enough time for my own creativity. And yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I have all the answers now. Right. I don't at all. But I know that I need to be better about that for myself. And I think that is just better for my own mental health. So reading the book was just like a reminder, like, Estelle, what are you doing? You haven't written a word in like 2 years. What's wrong with you?
Right. Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Yay. I'm glad I could help that.
What is your number one piece of advice for writer's block?
I mean, you know, what I do when I feel like I have writer's block is I turn around and I pick a book off my shelf, like one of my favorite books, and I read a page and I just close my eyes and see what it stirs up. And then I just start writing. That is how I deal with writer's block on a daily basis. But you know, when it's something where you just have to, you have to get to the computer or get to the typewriter or get to the notebook, I think it's really just a matter of discipline. You know, I just feel like we come up with so many excuses.
Yes.
And that this is one of the reasons why I don't like to write from home, because between dogs and the internet and all that kind of stuff, like I wrote most of Sorrow in a coffee shop in Mill Valley, the same coffee shop that is in the book, because they don't have an internet connection. And
smart. There were
no distractions, you know? So yeah, I think it's just a matter of doing it. You know, we all just need to sit down and do it.
Yes.
But I will also say I remember when we decided like we have to close our office and everyone's going to be working from home for a while, which we thought would be like 4 weeks, maybe, you know.
I know, we all were.
Later.
We get back in June.
Yeah. And I remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to be so creative. I'm going to have so much more free time, and I'm going to be writing more, and I'm going to be drawing and painting. And I've actually had a really hard time. And for a couple of months, I really was beating myself up about it. Like, why am I such a lazy ass? And then I just was like, this is stressful and traumatic, and none of us really know what's going on, and it's scary, and like, give yourself a break. You've been going and going and going and working so hard for so many years, like just enjoy kind of doing less. And so I've been really enjoying doing less. And my goal is like, once the holidays are over, to just really sit down and start a new book.
I'm glad you said that. Giving yourself a break is a advice I give to friends all the time. And then I have to remind myself that I need to do the same thing. And Laura is a very good, will periodically send me little emails reminding me of that, which I'm grateful for. She's a good pal. You're right. It is a really traumatic time. And I think we sort of forget that, which seems hard to forget, but it is easy to forget because we've just kind of been numb for so many months.
Yeah. Well, people keep talking about this big renaissance is coming. And I think that's a good way to look at it. Like, we've all been hunkering down and we're feeling a lot of things. We're experiencing a lot of things. We're missing a lot of things. And I think that like all of that is going to turn into something eventually. Like, a lot of great art is going to come out of this year. I am very, very, I strongly believe that. But yeah, I think that we need to give ourselves a break about making it right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm looking forward to what comes out of all this time to ourselves.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm sitting here because I am a fan of you and Laura was nice enough to invite me. So my question is, who would you be fangirling over in a similar conversation?
Well,
more books.
Okay, so my biggest hero in the world is Bono. If I were to get a chance to chat with him about his work, I would be able to just die. because U2 is my favorite band since I was 11. And like I said, I'm about to turn 50. So that is many, many years of teaching me about life and love and so many other things that I just wish I could thank him for and talk to him about. I also, because this book was so inspired by The National, to be able to talk with Matt from The National would be really cool. As far as writers go, who would I really love to talk to as a writer? That one I have to think about. There's so many, but most of them are dead. Most of my favorite writers.
I was thinking about this morning because I was like talking to Tiffany, talking to Anna Martin, the Babysitter's Club, and then like talking to Judy Blume would probably be like my top three. So
I've been having some really funny conversations about Judy Blume lately.
Oh, really? In what way?
Well, because my friend and I were talking recently. I don't know. Is this like a PG-rated podcast, or can I?
We can swear.
We could get a little dirty.
Yeah.
Because my friend and I were talking about how Forever, Judy Blume's Forever, was like the first book that we ever read that was super sexy, and I remember reading it, and like there's a scene in it where the main character is giving a blowjob to her boyfriend, and I remember being like I was in seventh grade or something when I read this book, and just like, people do that? Like, what? No, I'm never going to do that. That is never, no, I'm never going to put a dick in my mouth. And then like cut to 8 years later or whatever. And like, you know, my first boyfriend, and I see his dick and I'm like, oh, I definitely want to put that in my mouth. Real weird. So thank you, Judy Blume, for introducing me to that.
I feel like she probably gets like a ton of letters and hears about this all the time. Honestly, is the main character's name Michael in that book? But
I can't remember. But he had red hair. Michael,
I think so.
And he named his penis in the book as well.
Yes.
Yes. So I kind of want to go back and read that book and see if it's as sexy as I thought it was back then.
She wrote Summer Sisters, which is like another one of my ultimate favorite books. I still have exactly the same copy I bought in high school, right near your book.
I love that.
And that was also pretty scandalous. I can't believe I read that. I think it might have come out before God-Shaped Hole, but I just reread that recently too. And I was just like, whoa, I have so many thoughts. Although it's supposed to be a Hulu series, but I don't know, I guess, what's going to happen now with the pandemic and how much that's going to delay. So interested, because there's a lot of interesting scenes in that book as well.
What book is that?
Summer Sisters.
I don't think I ever read that one.
It's like about two girls who meet when they're young in school. They're both like complete opposites. the one's family sort of adopts the other for the summer. And it's, it kind of, they grow up together, but a lot of intense things happen. So it's like falling in love the first time, what happens with their friendship when one of them goes off to college and the other one decides not to. It's a really intense book, but it's still one of my favorites and it still holds up after all this time, which I mean, Judy Blume. So
yes,
yes. I think you should like reread Forever and then just like keep updates on social media for everybody.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and find my old copy.
I feel like I might still have mine. I like that book. I like got different covers and everything, which is also sort of like deceiving, I guess.
Yes.
Yes.
You're taking me back.
I know. I love Judy. She's just the best. And now she owns a bookstore, so she's just even more. Yeah, in Key West.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
She's like the same place as my cabin. It's like all these like old school YA authors.
Yeah, it's like
there.
It's like another dream just to actually publish a book and then own a bookstore, which would be two of mine. So
yes,
maybe someday. Maybe the last thing, because I feel like we kind of thrown into the last your previous books, which I love so much. Do you still think about God Shaped Hole and How to Kill a Rockstar? Because I think about them very often. And one thing that was nice and that I did send you a message about over the weekend is that there were little like Easter eggs in Sorrow, which I appreciated so much. And I was just like gasping on the couch. And again, my husband's like, are you okay? and I love that so much. And I, as a fan, I appreciate that because those books came out a really long time ago. But I also love that people keep discovering them. And I just wonder if you like have any like fun stories or fan stories about either of those two books that you wanted to share.
I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, one thing I'll say about God Shaped Hole, it's funny, I hadn't read that book in many, many years. And then a couple of years ago, I think it was 2017, Sourcebooks decided to do a 15-year anniversary version of it. And so they asked me to reread it and just like see if there was anything I wanted to change or edit or just check for any kind of typos or anything. And it really moved me. You know, I felt like it had been so long that I felt like I was reading it as a reader, not as the person who wrote it. And that was so fun for me. And I've been thinking about doing that with How to Kill a Rockstar because I haven't read that either since it came out. And that would be fun. But as far as any good stories, you know, I think it's just people who discover the books and then they relate to them. And that always, I don't know. I forget that people read my books. I think it's a funny thing. And when I was, I guess I would say it was about 6 years ago. Do you know Colleen Hoover and Karen Fisher? So they emailed me out of the blue. I had never heard of them. I didn't know them. And I get an email from one of them, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Hi, you don't know us, but there's this book conference going on in San Francisco right now. And we're huge fans of your work. And we're wondering if you might want to show up and just bring some books and sign some books. And we really want to meet you. And I happened to be doing nothing that day, Saturday afternoon. And I was like, I don't know who these people are, but they sound cool. I guess I'll do it. And so I went to this, this little book conference, which wasn't a little book conference. There was thousands of people there.
Was this Book Bonanza or no?
It was before Book Bonanza.
Okay.
Some other version of Book Bonanza. Mm-hmm. Something similar, but more corporate, I think. And so like they had announced that I was coming and there was a line of hundreds of people. I literally didn't know that more than 100 people had ever heard of my books, honestly, because it had been so long and I hadn't written in a long time. And it was such an intense and moving day because they just kind of like woke me up to this whole new world of readers that I didn't even know existed. So I feel like I owe them so much thanks, because I don't know that I would have even written Sorrow if it wasn't for them kind of being like, see how many people are waiting for another book, you know? So that's like one of my best fan stories, because it turned into really important friendships in my life.
I love that so much. That's so wonderful. We were both in Denver at the same time because you were there for Book Bonanza, and there for work, and we missed each other. And I was like, that would have been my own. I'm glad that this happened. I had no idea. Right. Because I was like, I have to say, I'm the kind of person who will like not go up to anyone and say anything. And
me too.
And as a person who works with authors, I mean, I'm just very like calm about it. But also know how like magical and amazing it is. And I don't take it for granted whatsoever. So to even think that I was like considering, like, can I make this happen for myself, is a huge deal, because I do get very shy about that. And I never know what to say. And I think one thing about you is you're just so gracious with your fans. And I feel like that started from the very beginning when you like put that AOL email in your book, you know? And I love that you carry that with you. I see you sharing all of things all the time. You're constantly like replying back. And as a reader, I love that. And then also as like a person who's a publicist who works with authors, I mean, I just, you know, it's so genuine and you can fake that. And I know that everybody appreciates it, and that's why they want more books from you too.
Well, I appreciate that, you know. I mean, it would be in a vacuum if people weren't reading it and caring about these characters like I care about them, you know.
It's true. Laura, do you want to ask about some book recommendations?
So let's talk about, what is your go-to genre?
Pretty much general literary fiction. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of nerdy that way.
I love this. Estelle?
Like me, keep talking about how I've collected these books that have come with me from home to college that I have here with me now. Do you have any like books that you have that have been in your collection for a really long time?
Yes. I mean, I have so many. I have bookshelves and bookshelves because I'm so old. I used to collect first edition books of my favorite books. And then there was this like flood in my apartment in New York and they all got destroyed. And then I got so scared about collecting them that I stopped doing that. But I mean, I have so many books that just mean so much to me from my childhood, like my first copy of To Kill a Mockingbird and my copy of Catcher in the Rye and my copy of Walden, and like just, you know, a lot of nerdy stuff that I just love so much. And I turn to those books all the time. My Things They Carried copy is one of the books that I take with me everywhere I go. And I read that book once a year and it just means so much to me.
I love that so much. Have you read anything while we've been quarantined? Or
so many good books I've read in the, this is another thing that's been such a gift in quarantine, is I've been reading. I mean, I generally read a lot, but I've been reading a lot. So many great books. I recently read this novel called Euphoria by Lily King that was just blew my mind. I thought it was so sweet and so beautiful and so painful. I just read Untamed by Glennon Doyle, which I really, really liked. What else? I loved both of Sally Rooney's books. I read those both last year, but I really loved them a lot. Yeah, just so many good books. So many, and I can't think of any of them, but the Lily King book was really, she has another new book out called Writers and Lovers, which I liked a lot. And I liked it so much that I went to see what else she wrote. And then I found Euphoria. And Euphoria, I just thought was everything I love in a novel. Really simple and really moving and captivating.
I love that. I wrote all of these down because I'm going to
have to let me know if you like them.
Yes. I think, I mean, do you have anything else that you want to say about sorrow before we end? Which I don't want to. I mean, Laura, can we go on for 3 hours?
Yeah, can we just keep talking until tomorrow? I mean, I just want people to read it. This book means a lot to me, and I really like it. I really like these characters. I learned a lot from them, and I just hope that other people can do the same. I hope readers really relate to it and connect to it.
And what is also awesome is afterwards, I think they're going to be curious, like especially with all of the performance art. So there's a lot to look up afterwards.
Yes.
I think one thing you did was made all of the art that October was creating feel very accessible. And as someone who feels very intimidated or did when I was in college learning about like avant-garde performance art, I didn't, again, I mean, I'm a different age now. So I appreciated that, especially thinking about art as everything we do, like even if it's just cooking.
Yes.
It's totally true. There's a presentation. You're putting a part of yourself. Everything we put a part of ourselves in is art.
And that I think is something that really is helpful this time of, you know, in this time of COVID too, because we don't get a chance to go out and do much. So, you know, I was just like today, I was telling my husband, like, I need to set the Thanksgiving table. And for our Thanksgiving dinner is going to be the two of us and our neighbors who have also been quarantining. You know, none of our families live near us. And so we're just, you know, going to have five people, including us. So it's a really small dinner. And I was just like, I need to decorate the table. And like, it's just like something exciting to look forward to, of like a little creative endeavor that will feel like, I don't know, like some sort of self-expression that fuels the next one.
It's true. I used to always like to decorate my parents' table and make little like origami turkeys or do all of those things. And I guess I just never really thought about it that way, but you know, maybe we should.
It's an art project. Yeah. Everything is an art project.
This podcast is an art
project. It is.
Awesome.
Where can everybody find you online, Tiffany?
Everyone can find me on Instagram. That is the best place to find me if you want me to respond. I'm on Facebook, but I don't go on it that much. I'm on Twitter, but I'm never really on it. But I'm on Instagram all the time. So Tiffany DiBartolo, at Tiffany DiBartolo, Tiffany with an IE. And I also have a website, which you can reach me there and email me there. But definitely Instagram is the fastest way to find me.
Thank you so much for this. This has been...
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thank you both. This was so much great. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatreadnextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORead10 to save. Visit whatreadnextblog.com/queenbeereads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.